Dr. Paul, welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. My guest today is attorney Greg Glaser. We're discussing medical exemptions, free speech litigation that he's been involved with, and the control group data. It's powerful, folks, and Dee Dee ends this with a personal piece about what it's like to fight for freedom for him personally. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. My topic is strength. That's not an easy one for me. The flip side of strength might be weakness. And I came through a period where that confident, self-confident, overconfident Dr. Paul, maybe almost a false sense of strength, needed to just be taken down to his knees and be weak and be broken. And out of that came a whole different level of strength that is not of my own making. And that's powerful. So I think to all of you out there who maybe struggle at times to find the strength to carry on or the strength to do something important that you know you're called to do, remember, you don't need to do it alone. And in fact, when you reach for strength that's from above or from within, that comes from love, that comes from spirit, it's powerful beyond imagination. That's strength. Welcome, Greg Glaser. You are the General Counsel and National Coalition Director for Physicians for Informed Consent. But hey, way before that, we go back. We were in the beginning days of PIC, Physicians for Informed Consent. I consider you a friend. PIC has done such amazing work delivering data on infectious diseases, vaccines, trying to unite doctors and scientists and health professionals, attorneys, and families who oppose mandatory vaccines. It's all about letting people have choice. Physiciansforinformedconsent.org. And you're a litigator for Children's Health Defense. I'd love to hear more about that. And you have been a health freedom lawyer in California for a long time and are passionate about organic living and the Constitution. A couple other topics we might choose to touch on. 15 years ago, you were advising colleagues that vaccines would be used during a future pandemic in violation of constitutional rights. So you were ready on the front lines warning Americans when COVID arrived. I guess a visionary of such, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Paul, for that great introduction. I was right on the front lines. Even in 2017, after President Trump was elected, I was watching a very long presentation by Anthony Fauci before anyone really knew who he was. People like us knew who he was, but the general public had no idea who this guy was. And he was saying that there was going to be a future pandemic and that it would test America. We needed to increase our vaccine stockpiles and all this stuff. We need to invest in vaccines. I'm watching this long interview. No one else seemed to be watching it. And so I immediately tell everyone in the movement about this. Hey, look at what Anthony Fauci just said. He said there's going to be another pandemic. I didn't think much of it at the time, but as it turned out to be a very large deal. And I think that's something that surprises a lot of people who come to the health freedom movement when they hear about doctors like yourself or lawyers like me, and they say, how did you know that vaccines were going to be such a big deal? You know, once you really dig into it and study. And I remember when I first started reading your work in the Vaccine Friendly Plan, and it opened my mind to what was possible to put into the mainstream. And that was really the key for me, was how can we reach people in the middle, the persuadable middle? How do we reach people on Facebook? That's what was happening at the time. In 2014, 2015.
Yeah. And I think your understanding of the fact that there were dangers with vaccines, understanding that whole thing of risk benefit, goes even way back before me. I think you tell me a little bit actually about your, and our viewers, your childhood. What got you to be an attorney who was interested in issues like medical freedom?
Oh, yeah. For me, it was the Constitution. I saw that our greatest threat would be vaccination, for the reason that it's the one thing that people will force to be injected into others without their informed consent. and the law will sanction it. As I realized that this was the greatest threat to our health freedom, I definitely got involved. But I had some early knowledge when I was just following the money. I was looking at who funds these pharmaceutical companies. And then pretty soon I was finding out about vaccines. And it's just suspicious. It was so suspicious that the vaccines had saved the day just time and again. But then when I looked deeper into it, I saw that the vaccine was introduced after the day had already been saved. After doctors and engineers had already solved issues with just better treatment, better access to plumbing and sanitation and so forth. We solved infectious disease issues. The vaccine was always taking the credit. And so this was suspicious. I thought surely there must be some benefit. And that brought me to PIC. This is our great science group. And we really go forward with the best citations that we can find to show your average American what's a defensible position you can take on Facebook and so forth.
Yeah.
But to get to that point, like my childhood and so forth, I would say that I grew up in a medical household. My mom's a nurse. I married a nurse. I was always interested in the medical field and science. And I find it as a lawyer to be a valuable undertaking. You want to align yourself with that which is defensible, that which you can support, at least through documentation, but preferably through really good witnesses. And so it was just very natural to me to gravitate toward physicians and scientists who were leading in this field.
Yeah. So coming from a medical family, as you say, my experience with the medical profession has been that they are pretty unaware of vaccine risks. Were you, your wife and your parents and all, were they more aware than the average person?
I grew up in a little town in California called Danville, and it's just like any other town in America. So nobody knew anything. We got all the shots. We just didn't know. And so it was only when I started researching other things, and I found that things like organic food are a gateway to learning about the world. It's just like in life, no matter what you study or what fields you go into, you can learn so much about creation and the world. Just pick a topic. They all eventually weave together in a great tapestry. And for me, it was learning about organic food and healing remedies, natural remedies, because like many families in America, we had some health issues in our family. I had a brother with cancer issue. Mm-hmm. And so that got me researching stuff. I had a nephew who was vaccine injured, although we didn't know it at the time. We just know that he got the vaccine and that was very suspicious that he got injured right afterwards. And he ended up developing seizures. And one of the things that we did at Physicians for Informed Consent was we later on proved the seizures. This is an example of one of the great documents that we put out just to educate families about the risk of vaccines and specifically what we can prove. How many seizures does the MMR cause? So we want to have to calculate it. So I think it's a good service that we offer through PIC is offering the public some numbers that they can look at and say, oh, okay, here's a doctor's crew and here's their numbers and here's their citations for those numbers. Yeah. And I have this great way, which is that I wish there was someone like me who could have talked to my mom. And that really motivates me today.
Yeah.
To do this work. And I love my mom. Oh my gosh. Of course.
Yeah.
And it's just that how nice would it be to be unvaccinated?
All right.
Treasure. You know?
So you said that and it means so much to me because I deal with my colleague Dee Dee Hoover, we have babies coming in here all the time to get body work, and they're seeking information that's different from the mainstream follow the CDC advice, and they just want to know more information. And Physicians for Informed Consent, you guys are providing the other side of the story, actually the real information. And when you go into your pediatrician's office and they give you this thing called a VIS, vaccine information sheet, and it's just like propaganda. They like minimize the downside of vaccines, it's one in a million. And then they maximize the scare factor of all these diseases. And basically they quote data from the 1800s of how scary they were when these diseases are basically not even around anymore. What you guys have done with Physicians for Informed Consent is there it is. There's the modern equivalent of a vaccine information sheet, but giving you the real information. So thank you for having that ready and available. There's another one.
Yep.
MMR vaccine. And there's so many. Where can people go to get those?
Sure. They are right on our website, physiciansforinformedconsent.org.
Yeah. That's just one of the examples of why Physicians for Informed Consent is so important. What other things might you highlight as reasons people need to know about PIC?
Oh, yeah. You know, what PIC has done is we've really stood in the gap. As people were banned left and right on social media during COVID, PIC was able to stand in the gap. We were able to go forth on Facebook and Twitter and not get banned. And so that allowed us to reach tens of millions of people with a very important message about vaccines. Because right when they were learning about COVID and saying, hey, maybe I don't want a COVID vaccine, maybe I don't want a COVID booster, then they started to also look at other childhood vaccines. And so PIC was right there and we weren't banned and we were giving them that gentle slope, that open hand, that nice gentle hand saying, hey, there's some things that we'd like to show you. And I think that was a great service. And that's always been PIC's mission. Our president is Shira Miller, MD, as Paul. And she's a great researcher and a tremendous talent. And she's so motivated to reach people where they are. She wants us to reach the middle, the persuadable middle. And so that's been PIC's mission. And in the process, we have really gotten ourselves right into it. So not only are we there on Facebook, we are debating on Facebook. So one of the things about sticking your neck out is you attract the haters. Now, as from sticking your neck out, you attracted the medical board. With PIC, we attract doctors who are very pro-vaccine. And they want to come onto our Facebook page and just debate endlessly. And we say, great, welcome.
Bring it on.
That's all we want. Bring it on. That's all we want to do is debate you. So it's been a forum. And it's been a forum where parents who are on the fence, people who are generally from the middle, they're on the fence and they're just watching from the sidelines. Like, I wonder how this is going to play out. And one of the things that we've always done is we are always polite. We go out of our way to be exceptionally polite and scientific. No matter what somebody slings at us, we will always hand back gently a scientific citation vetted. And we do so in the most polite and kind words. And that's served us well. So we've grown a lot. And this is that's our mission. Our mission is to share data on infectious disease and vaccines. That's part one. Part two is we want to unite physicians and scientists and other doctors to oppose mandatory vaccination. And we know that worthy goal, just that one worthy goal is enough for us to do as a group. We are being called to take on other issues as well, just because once you get into informed consent, you start looking at lots of different things. But we've made our mission to focus on vaccines, and that obviously includes all vaccines on the schedule. Yeah. And one great thing we've done is we've built this coalition. I would consider it to be the largest coalition in the world of health freedom groups. And we call it the Coalition for Informed Consent. And the whole premise is that we're all united around this idea that you have the right to say no to a vaccine. It's really simple. And that premise of informed consent, once it's respected, will allow us to do the science necessary to really show what vaccines are doing to the population. And this is where you're a leader, Paul, because it's only through a genuine control group that you'll ever really know the risk of vaccines. And you highlighted our sheets on, this is like our VIS type sheet for vaccines. And the common theme with all of our documents is that the vaccine has never been proven safer than the disease, just using the government's own data, their own stuff. But the thing that's always missing from our work is the unvaccinated control group. It's this sort of, it's the one thing that is necessary in order to show the world what the exact calculated risk of vaccination is. If there is another way, I cannot think of it.
Yeah. No, you need to compare apples to apples, oranges to oranges. If you're looking at a vaccine and what it's doing, harm and benefit, you've got to control it with somebody who's not getting the vaccine or any other vaccines, because that's been the problem. You've got this toxic soup of a bunch of vaccines. You remove one or add one, it doesn't make much difference because you don't have a real control group, as you said. Yeah. It's so important what you guys are doing. And you touched on the core of medical freedom, and physicians, I think, should get around this. First, do no harm. This goes back to the roots of modern medicine. And here's the other thing about vaccines. You are giving them to healthy people in general. So this is a potentially risky procedure that you're asking a healthy person to do. They should have the option of saying, no, thank you. Bodily integrity. And that's what you guys are all about.
Oh, yeah. At the beginning of our organization in 2015, and you were right there on the ground floor as a founding member and a board member. And at the beginning of our organization, we really focused on the ethics of informed consent in a stand-up way. First, do no harm. This is our leading point. What we found was that when we were presenting the ethical argument, it was too often falling on deaf ears in the population for the reason that people just assume that vaccines were providing a public good, a public health benefit. And so what we realized is that we needed to eventually switch our strategy a little bit, or just double down our strategy. And so in addition to ethics, we also really focused on the data, focusing on the data on infectious disease, just really to prove a single point. And if PIC proves just this one point, it is enough to justify our entire existence, which is that according to the government's own data, the vaccine that they propose has never been proven safer than the disease it targets. Not once. They've never proved it. They've never had an epidemiological study with sufficient statistical strength to prove it. And we show that in each of our documents, no matter what vaccine you're looking at, whether it's pertussis or
I like that you tackle those two, because those are the ones pediatricians push as an example of why you must vaccinate. Babies are dying of pertussis. Go to physiciansforinformedconsent.org and get the actual data. The vaccine is probably killing more people than pertussis is killing. That's interesting.
Yeah. Right.
And even with measles, which everybody's got this scare of measles, but I'm old enough to have had measles and lived through that time when measles had become such a benign thing. I think maybe in the 1800s with malnourishment and what have you, the conditions of that time, it was more deadly. It's not something to fear anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so true. On the point about my journey to get to PIC and what PIC did, I would say it was a solemn journey. I've always felt this responsibility to be a good representative for the organization. We want to put our best foot forward because it's so important. Lives hang in the balance of whether children do or don't get vaccinated, because we've seen the unvaccinated, the healthiest people on the planet. And so with PIC, we've always made our mission and strived to present the best possible citations with the most credible experts that we have available to us and get stuff published in a way that is accessible to people and put ourselves out there as a credible doctors organization in a movement that has sometimes been known for being like eccentric, right? You know, there's a lot of eccentrics that come to the health freedom movement, which is great. But PIC's role in this scientific movement is to be the doctors organization that stands up and makes this one proof point. And it's key for us to also get our information out there, not only in social media, but also in the courts. So one of the things that I've been empowered to do is submit our documents to judges who are weighing vaccine cases so that they can know what is at stake here. And so that has included in family law court, where parents are having custody issues. That has included in a minor's custody case that we won in the District of Columbia. And I say we won, I mean that the side that PIC supported won. That was the side of Children's Health Defense and ICANN. And in other cases as well, such as at the United States Supreme Court level when OSHA was doing its mandate. And so PIC has been there advocating for the rights of families, not only for medical exemptions, but also for religious and personal belief exemptions as well, because we know that's how families can remain unvaccinated. And it's only if you have an unvaccinated people that you can do an unvaccinated control group. And that's good science.
So let me ask you a kind of a specific question, because I get this asked of me a couple's going through a divorce or a separation and one party wants to vaccinate and the other one doesn't, and they can't find anybody to represent the parent who doesn't want to vaccinate and knows a lot of the information that we've just been talking about, seems to be at a disadvantage. Is PIC a resource for that situation?
Absolutely. Yeah. PIC, PIC, and also Children's Health Defense, we have partnered and we are a resource to lawyers throughout the country on this issue of what do you do in court when a judge has questions about vaccination? So one of the things that we can do is provide a supporting expert. We can work with the existing physician who is on the case. And we can also work with the current lawyer on the case to advise them on what resources are available, whether that's briefs or scientific matters. One of the things I've learned in helping with these cases is that in helping lawyers with these cases is that the judges can be a little bit intimidated by the amount of data. Mm-hmm. And so what the judges really want to see is they want to see the primary care physician provide a recommendation based on evidence that the primary care physician has reviewed, so-called expert evidence. And then the judge will feel comfortable specifying what is considered to be in the best interest of the child, which tends to be the primary care physician. And from the perspective of many parents, this makes doctors the gatekeepers of whether their children get vaccinated or not. That could be a very stressful thing. And so this really reinforces the importance of a good doctor-patient relationship, which again brings us back to informed consent. It always comes back to informed consent. Isn't that funny? As long as a doctor is willing to respect informed consent, the whole system can actually work pretty well. People get what they want. They get to go in and out of facilities. And the doctors are saying, look, I'm going to tell you what I think is in the pros and the cons. Ultimately, you're going to decide. And then generally people get to where they need to go. And then we have tons of data and we analyze the data and then make better decisions based on it. But if you just take out the one piece, you just take out the one piece of informed consent, the whole thing falls apart. Parents are at each other's throats in family law court. Doctors and their doctor-patient relationship is disrupted. We no longer have the data to do unvaccinated control group studies. Informed consent is so necessary. And so I found this as a lawyer and working with doctors for physicians for informed consent, that standing up for this one ethic, this one legal right is absolutely essential to our success as a scientific society if we're going to continue this path of experimenting in effect with these medications that disrupt the human immune system. And of course, many feel that should no longer, that experiment should no longer continue, that the data is already out and it's been shown. And so yeah, I'm just fascinated by the subject matter. And I know that we need informed consent. We need control groups.
Go back to my couple who are at odds. They don't have a doctor who honors informed consent, right? No. The typical pediatrician, sadly, still pushes, promotes the CDC schedule, believes in it, because I think they just have their blinders on. And if presented with even the amazing documents from Physicians for Informed Consent, I bet a lot of those pediatricians go, that's, you know what I mean? I don't know, whatever reason they use to they don't want to look at it, they want to deal with it.
They don't want to look at it. Yeah, I've seen it in court. I've seen these pediatricians, for example, one, a pediatrician in Indiana, didn't even know what the VAERS system was. This man had been injecting children for 20 years and had never even reported a vaccination his entire career, which is statistically impossible, like meaning that he would be in violation of the law, because statistically, with all of the injections, he would have seen multiple vaccine injections under any standard, multiple vaccine injuries under any standard. And so it's an example that these primary care physicians do not know. They're not respecting informed consent because they're just saying, yeah, you need to take this. This is what's required for school. I consider this to be in the best interest. And then the judge is right there saying, all right, well, I'm just going to follow what the primary is saying. And so that's a problem. And so what we try to do at PIC and also at Children's Health Defense is we'll come in and offer resources to the non-vaccinating parent saying, look, this is what your rights are. Here's some good scientific evidence. We want to work with your lawyer so that we can help you marshal this evidence and give that child the best chance that he has.
Gotcha. So even if they don't themselves have a, I've lost my license, which happens to most are many doctors who stand for informed consent were pushed off and gotten rid of so that I can't go to court and be credible because I'm, oh, you lost your license. But you as the attorneys pick CHD, you can come in and support the attorney who then has the ammunition necessary.
That is correct. And some of the resources we could provide to the attorney is guiding them on how to cross-examine the primary care physician. That one example I gave was the attorney wasn't sure how to cross-examine the physician. So we said, hey, ask about VAERS. Do they know about that? Ask about this, ask about that. Ask them if they know this data point. And that type of guidance with how to cross-examine an expert can be helpful, but it's not an enviable position, I have got to say, to these parents. The number one thing you can do is never kick divorce. Never put the children in that situation. I'm telling you, the parents get divorced. Who pays the bill? It's the children.
Yeah. Interesting point. I just got off of an interview with Dr. Ken Stoller, and I know you've been involved with him.
Yes.
And there was an interesting aha moment for me. I had thought of it before, but he just spelled it out. He's like, with SB 277 that you had there in California, which was going to remove all exemptions except for the medical exemption, I had not realized that it appears that they intentionally broadened what physicians could use for a medical exemption, including family history, which pretty much makes it wide open. There's always a family history of something. So they captured, in a way, all the doctors who were really the most ethical doctors trying to provide informed consent, taking a careful history and trying to protect children. In a sense, they got captured. And then what happened, and you can speak to this, is why I'm bringing it up. From that time on, around 2015, I think, to today, what's been happening with doctors who are writing medical exemptions?
Oh, yeah. It's something I'm very familiar with because I've been helping to defend Dr. Stoller. I also helped defend Dr. Sutton and many other doctors. And I've done so with the help of lawyers like Rick Jaffe. And so that has included me even going to speak at these proceedings to defend these doctors. I've provided witness statements, for example. And what you just highlighted, Paul, is exactly correct, that the legislature in 2015 basically did a bait and switch on the health freedom movement. The legislature, like Dr. Richard Pan, he said, look, I'm going to quote this man, quote, if the physician feels that there's a genetic association in a sibling, a cousin, some other relative, if not safe for a vaccine, they can provide a medical exemption for that vaccine. There's no limitation on a physician from doing that other than their own professional judgment, their own knowledge and expertise about what they believe is safe for the patient. Close quote. What I just described, what I just quoted from Dr. Pan, it was the bait. That was the bait. They said, look, if there is a basis, if there's a medical basis, a genetic association of sibling, that's not a CDC contraindication. If there's a cousin, if they believe is not safe, then they can issue a medical exemption. So you don't have to get vaccinated to go to school. So that was the bait. And then pick doctors said, oh, okay. It looks like we have this authority now, like Dr. Stoller. It looks like we have this authority now to write medical exemption because they just changed the law. And so they took the bait and then came the switch. And then the medical board comes in and says, what are you doing? You can't write medical exemptions based on anything other than what the CDC says. And so we lawyers said, no, look at what you just said in 2015. Look at what the law says. Look what Senator Pan said. They said, sorry, tough luck. And that was the switch. And then they cracked down. They prosecuted Ken Stoller. They took away his license. They prosecuted Kelly Sutton. We provided excellent experts in court to defend these good doctors. And yet the medical board proceeding was not, in my opinion, a personal opinion, it was not conducted in a way that respected the evidence that we presented. It was biased in favor of the medical board's experts.
Yeah.
And so there was a great bait and switch happened. And this was an eye-opener for me as a lawyer. One of my faults would be that I can be idealistic. When I read something, I believe that is, I have read this in the law. This must be true. This is what the law says.
Right.
But then there's something else operating. There's politics operating behind the scenes. And I'm not savvy to those types of political situations. And so I didn't see the bait and switch that was happening.
And or so, perhaps were you even aware initially of the boards feeling as if, and in effect acting as if, they are above the law?
Yeah, yes, very much. They were setting their own standards. We at PIC, we had a conference in the year 2017 where we definitely talked about these issues. We said, look, it could be, I can't say that I didn't fully foresee the bait and switch. We did discuss it. Like Rick Jaffe and I, we talked about it with the doctors. We said, look, the medical board could go back to their old ways. Like they could get you still, but my opinion is I think you're okay. I think you're going to be protected. But as it turns out, I was wrong. The doctor got protected.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard to think back on that, that doctors lost their licenses because the law did not protect them. And I feel like this is a struggle that's been ongoing now in the COVID era. It's the continuation. That thing that happened, that bait and switch that happened with us, is now happening in the COVID era. You have all these doctors, they're getting better health outcomes using things like ivermectin, HCQ for COVID. And then comes the vaccine and they're like, nope, now there's only one standard. It's remdesivir and vaccine and that's it. And it was this like hard line. And meanwhile, there's all this evidence. Like currently right now, there's 99 studies in support of ivermectin that show a therapeutic benefit greater than the alternative. And yet it's just ignored. They don't even, and so in that sense, it is a rigged system. These medical boards are a rigged system. And so being on the ground floor and seeing that, now I'm so pleased to finally be winning on the issue. And so me and Rick Jaffe, we teamed up with PIC and with Children's Health Defense, and we're finally winning in federal court right now to regain doctors' ability to speak candidly with patients about COVID. And we're battling the same people who were against us in 2015. It's like this continuation where like, I don't know, like imagine soldiers on a battlefield and we're just fighting it out and there's been some scars, there's been some wounds, and then we like fall into another field. And then everybody like sees us on the other field and they're like, oh, how long has this battle been going on?
I thought we took you out. So you're talking about free speech litigation, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And where is that at? Do we have actual wins that you can now have in law? You have, what do you call it? A case reference that you go back to?
Oh, yes. We have a court order from a federal judge that says that the California Democrat law prohibiting misinformation on COVID is invalid, meaning that doctors can say what they want about COVID, ivermectin, HCQ in California. There was a 1-year time period where doctors couldn't say, they could only talk about the CDC narrative, and doctors were getting prosecuted. We were fighting back the medical board we had to file a case in the McKenzie case. We fought back and won against the medical board. Sometimes we had to send letters. Sometimes we had to sue. And so we're winning. And then we got the big in court, and that was earlier this year, where a judge said, what is this misinformation about COVID? The government can't prohibit what they consider misinformation. The government can prohibit wrongful actions, but not free speech, right? So it was this big free speech win. And this was another time when it clicked for me as a lawyer. I realized that judges really stand up for the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. That I can spend hours, days trying to persuade a judge on the science of vaccine, but I'm not going to get as far in days of argument that I will get in a single minute talking about the First Amendment. That is how powerful the First Amendment is. Because a judge sees the First Amendment, your right to freedom of speech and freedom of religion, he sees that as irrefutable. Hard law. There's no debate. You have rights. If I'm a court, I will respect it. So that's why the wins in the COVID era are all coming under the First Amendment. It's like this open door. And so that's why we won the free speech case. That's why Aaron Seary won the case in Mississippi to restore the religious exemption under the First Amendment. Because the judges are willing to respect that law.
They do take an oath, don't they, to uphold the Constitution?
They do.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to see more of these wins. And because we know we're on a winning streak, we're still going. So just today, working with Rick Jaffe, we filed a motion to have our case advance farther and get a permanent injunction on these issues so that the medical board can't try these shenanigans again. Because, Paul, they are up to shenanigans. They immediately after we beat them in court, they repealed their own law. They said, oh, now we're going to try to take away your good win by repealing our own law. That was their thing. And Rick Jaffe is now going into court, my assistants, and saying, Judge, look what they're doing. They're trying to undermine your order by repealing law so that you won't finish your ruling on this point.
Wow. And so, good work.
Sneaky tricks.
Yeah. Good work.
Oh, I'm empowered. I'm empowered by PIC and CHD. These groups know how to back the winner. And that is what's really important because heaven knows we need the wins.
Yeah. Congratulations. Thank you for that work. Keep up the good work. Just touch briefly, you were very involved with the publishing of the control group data, or at least litigating on behalf of the control group. Just let people know what that is.
Sure. So in the year 2020, Joy Garner completed a study of 1,482 unvaccinated Americans, completely unvaccinated. And she had only intended to do a survey, like a litigation survey. But as it turned out, her study had such statistical power that we presented it to these expert statisticians, multiple doctors, an expert in statistics, an expert in surveys and public health surveys. And they said, you know what you actually did here? You actually created a survey with above 99% confidence interval. And that is more powerful than many studies relied upon by the CDC to set national policy. And so we took this evidence to the court and said, Judge, we have evidence that vaccines are not helping public health, but they're actually harming public health. And so we want to do more science. Like this was originally just a pilot survey. We want to do more. But if we're going to do science, unvaccinated people have to be able to exist. So can you please sign an order that says unvaccinated people cannot be mandated to take a vaccine, to go to school, to go to work, et cetera. And this is right when COVID was starting.
Yeah.
So we were right on the ground floor. And I'm a lawyer, so I don't just go into court and ask for something. I went into court with 5,000 pages of fully vetted scientific materials. Perfect. Case presentation. And with one exception, which is that I was suing the president of the United States, which is considered to be something that you don't do. It's like a big ask. So I understood that I was asking for something big from the court, but the stakes were big. So I made my ask to the court and the court said, no, even if you have a case here, you got to take it to, you got to sue someone else. You can't sue the president. So I appealed up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court of it said, no, we're not going to take it. And eventually we ended up getting that judge dismissed on the grounds that he owned a bunch of pharma stock. So the case, it never set a good precedent or a bad precedent. It just exists in this space where we basically created a record. Like that's what the case accomplished is that we created a...
There's a legal record with this data.
Exactly. And it's right. There forever.
And that data is so powerful. I use it when I speak unvaxxed when I'm traveling the country because you realize with that data that vaccines are responsible, not solely, but largely responsible for most of the chronic disease we suffer in this country and around the world.
Indeed.
We have this crisis of chronic diseases. Where is it all coming from? Yeah, it's toxins and there are other things, but vaccines are a huge piece of it.
Indeed. One of the documents that came out of our litigation, which is so powerful, an expert report. I worked for about a year with this expert to prepare this report. It's a four. No one had ever done this. It's the most comprehensive report on vaccine safety, in my opinion, the history of ever. It is what we did was we looked at every single child's vaccine uptake, and we looked at the exact risk of the disease in society using all government data. And the way you do that is you have to use like school records. We looked at every single state, all the vaccine uptake. We looked at all the vaccine injuries, all the disease injuries, and then looked at even things like we even calculated the waning rate. That's how specific we were. And we made a 450-page report on every vaccine on the schedule and concluded and showed numerically exactly how for every vaccine, you're more likely to suffer serious disability or death from the vaccine than from the disease it targets. Every time, in some cases, it is orders of magnitude. And so we provide this whole huge report, and it's just this part of this record. And so this record can then be used in future cases when hopefully the time is right. And I think that the time is increasingly right.
Yeah.
Because people are now finally awakened to these things. There's a certain, and this is, I think, comes to my learning as a lawyer, is like there's a certain finesse to this. I think what I've learned is that you can't just go into court with the truth. You have to go in at the right time, the right lawyer, the right case. And you have to not only present the truth, but you have to present it in such a way that the alternative becomes just so untenable to the judge that he has to disrupt the status quo, which is what I was trying to do, was disrupt the status quo of mandatory vaccination.
Right.
And so those, the alignment of all of those pieces was not in my favor in the year 2020, but I hope that it will be in alignment in the future.
Absolutely. You have a couple other great documents, vaccines being sourced from foreign suppliers. That's mm-hmm. something, wow, I don't think people know that. And then also the historical issue of vaccines being introduced after major diseases, which you alluded to earlier. So those are great documents.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. One of our experts focused his entire efforts on showing the chain of custody of vaccine ingredients from Asia, and China in particular, but also India, to the United States. And it is a mess. It is a system of faulty vaccine vials, glass in the vials, children dying, vaccines not being refrigerated, mixed match ingredients. The whole idea that you get a vaccine that looks like the next vaccine right next to it is it's a false notion. It's the failure of quality control that people saw during COVID with mask production, for example. You see these guys on the floor weaving masks together. It's like, it's ridiculous, right? It's the same sort of thing happening in these third world countries where they're generating these ingredients for vaccines and getting them over to the United States, and which is, of course, a national security crisis. The idea that a third world nation had access to the bloodstream of every child in America, send me to a U.S. general so I can talk to them and let them know. That is a terrible idea.
It's not a great idea. The way you said it, folks, think about this. You're going to inject something into your child that has a bunch of ingredients from all over the world that has a poor chain of, oh my gosh, it's insanity. We're going to run out of time. So I wanted to, in wrapping it up, and then I'm going to have Dee Dee chat with you just for a moment, get a little personal and turn you into this amazing real man that you are. Just probe a little bit for our audience. And our audience is folks who are aware at various levels of what's going on. What would you like them to remember and know?
Oh, thank you. That there is a reason for everything. Even the wise cannot see all ends. Gandalf said in Lord of the Rings that sometimes it looks like things are really bad with mandatory vaccination. It looks like we had suffered these hard losses and a lot of children were injured. But in the process, we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn a lot of lessons. We're going to learn how to heal ourselves. We're going to learn about organic food and natural living. We're going to learn about integrative medicine. And those lessons, once we've learned them, can help prevent something far worse than vaccine injury. Because we're coming on a time in technological development where biotech is really, really advanced. And if we don't learn how to take care of ourselves and be natural and organic and just healthy, healing people, you know, cool people, basically. If we don't relearn that skill, which, by the way, our grandparents knew. If we don't relearn that skill, then we're not going to be able to handle the biotechnology revolution that Pfizer and Klaus Schwab are promising the people. And part of it is transhumanism. And so vaccines, as hard as it is to learn this lesson, we are right on the forefront of something very important. And so when we speak to people about vaccines, vaccine injuries, and the opportunities and control groups, it's very important to share our tremendous optimism that we are learning lessons. And that we do have the solution as unvaccinated people, and that there is going to be this great learning. And isn't that ironic that vaccines, the things that are supposed to immunize us against disease, vaccine injury immunized us against transhumanism. I think that's ironic.
There you have it, folks. I was teasing you at the beginning of our interview about that nice big beard, and you said, I look like a homesteader, and you're talking like a homesteader right now. We got to get back to organic food and living and being unvaccinated. So
that's the way.
Thank you for that wisdom, and I'm going to have Didi come chat with you for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for being willing to let me interview you. So
for the opportunity.
Normally, we have on these uptight lawyers and doctors and Doc discusses, not you, Doc discusses all of the science and the law and all of that. And then I come on and discuss the personal stuff. But you actually did a really good job, or Doc did a really good job of that with you already. I'm sitting on the other side and I'm listening, and I definitely hear this amazing human being that you're passionate. So I want to know, where does your passion come from? What drives your faith over fear?
Yes, thank you. For me, it is Christ is King. And there is this wonderful opportunity that we all have to be fearless in Christ. Conquered the world. It says so in John 16:33. And I love that when we reach out to families, that they also reach out to us as professionals. And it becomes this wonderful relationship of learning, where I learn so much from families and they learn so much from me. And these unvaccinated families are just the coolest. They're living a healthy way. They share stories about what it's like. Sometimes they send me pictures of their children and just thriving. It's so motivating that we're able to help them in their time of need, and then they are able to be ambassadors for what is ultimately the solution. Because these children are our future. These unvaccinated children, they are resilient. There is such a wonderful message that comes from the idea that you have two parents, mom and dad, and they produce an unvaccinated child, and that child is healthy for life. And even if those two parents were previously vaccinated themselves, they didn't know, they can produce a fully healthy, unvaccinated child. And that is so beautiful. And so there's this tremendous hope I have that our future is bright.
You know, what a concept too, Greg. So one question I have is, obviously, Doc and I are all on board with that. But so what are you going to say to those people that say, oh, great, everybody's going to produce these unvaccinated children, and then all of these diseases are going to come back? Again, that fear that everybody has. What do you say to them?
Oh, sure. I would start with what the actual risk of polio was, even in the pre-vaccine period. And what the risk is of paralysis and death is like 0.000. And then you finally get to a 1 far down the road. And so we were dealing with issues that weren't serious at the time. It's true there were people in Ireland, but then we figured out how to cure polio. We figured out how to fix it. We figured out how to diagnose it and cure it. And so just today, it's not an issue. It's the same with other diseases like diphtheria. You cannot find a case of diphtheria. I'm sorry. And so even if we did on a mass level, everyone doesn't get vaccinated, we know the risk. We know the exact risk to society because there was a paper in 2020 that calculated. It was published in Vaccines. Hector Magno and Beatrice Gollum published a paper called, going from memory, but it's the measuring the benefits of vaccination. Okay. And what they did is they took the pre-vaccine risk numbers. For example, the vaccine was introduced, the MMR in 1963, the measles vaccine. You look at the 10 years prior to that, you say, okay, what was the death rate for the vaccine, right? And then what you do is you extrapolate that to today's population. And then you know how many people are benefiting from vaccines.
Right. So I want to get as many questions in as I can. So sorry for cutting you off. So basically, you would give them the facts that we know, yeah. Right? And hope that's going to be enough. It doesn't seem to be that way all the time, but I think that's the biggest thing. So do you have any children?
I do. I have a daughter. She's awesome.
How old is she?
She's 16.
What fun age.
Yeah. I would say every age is fun. Yeah.
So was she
vaccinated? Enjoyed every age.
Was she vaccinated?
At a young age, before I knew, mm-hmm. unfortunately, she got the first round of shots. And it was, for me, I should have known better. That we were in the room, the nurse says, you have to hold her down. I was physically holding her down, her limbs down, so that the nurse could inject her. And I should have known, like, I knew it wasn't right. Something about this was not right. And then we get out into the lobby, and she's just crying hysterically. She's red, and just, there was rashes, and it was like it was a scene. And then we go back, we're like, we think maybe something's not right here. And they were like, no, that's fine. That's normal. And so we took her home, and then I was like, is it normal? Let me start researching this. And then I had already begun a research process in terms of organic food, where I was now open-minded just enough that there might be something here. And then I realized that the risk of vaccine injury had been highly downplayed by mainstream science.
And so you caught it pretty quickly then, though. If she only had that one round, that's amazing. Yeah. So then one more fun question. So knowing what you know now, I normally ask, knowing what you know now, when it came time to get education or go to school, would you have chosen a different career? I'm going to answer that for you. I think you should have been a pediatrician. Listening to all your knowledge and how you think, I'm sitting on the other side going, wait, doc, was this the lawyer or was this the doctor? Which is which? So would you have done something differently knowing what you know now?
Thank you so much for asking. I love the question because it implies that I have skills beyond what I currently have. And I think that language is like that. You can learn any language. And often if you start early, you'll thrive better. And so I'm very pleased with the profession that I've chosen. It allows me to exercise multiple of my skills, but especially writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I still think you should be a pediatrician. You're young. There's time. So thank you very much for your time, and just keep doing everything you're doing in our world. I think one of the professions that I always hear being put down is lawyers, how greedy they are, how selfish they are, how intense, all these things. I know more lawyer jokes, or have heard more lawyer jokes than any other thing. And it frustrates me, because knowing you and hearing all about you and reading things, you're an amazing man. So you're definitely incredible. And I hope that everyone watching this, actually, I'm going to ask you one more question. What do you say to other lawyers who could be doing what you're doing, but they're not?
Just like Paul has had some challenges speaking with other doctors to persuade them, I've also run into some issues with other lawyers trying to persuade them. Oftentimes I'll send information and say, oh, I'll review it, but then they don't get back to me on it. Right. It can be a tough crowd. And as they say, you want to cast your net on the right side of the boat. So I've had a lot of success with lawyers, but usually that's because I'm casting my net on the right
side. Yeah, speaking to the choir. Thank you very much for your time. It was a wonderful interview, and I hope to meet you in person someday.
Thank you, Didi.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.